not every weekend you see nationwide protests in both Russia and Belarus, but that's exactly what we just saw. And now comes the fallout. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFARL, and joining me in the studio is RFARL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Brian.
Hey, so busy weekend. Russia yesterday witnessed its largest protest since 2012, nationwide protests. And a day earlier, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko cracked down hard on street demonstrations across that country, marking the 99th anniversary of Belarus's initial independence in 1918. So what's your big takeaway from this weekend, Steve, and where do you think this is going?
Well, I guess the biggest takeaway is, for me, would have to be that, I mean, you have situations in both these countries that would have been really hard to predict as little as a month ago, maybe. Certainly in terms of Russia. But I wouldn't have predicted either of these large protests, happening as recently as a month ago. And I mean, I was reading, someone said on Twitter, well, you know, forget it. There are no similarities between the protests in Belarus and Russia and the potential outcomes. But one thing that is, I think there are some similarities. I mean, one of them is that these are both at the very bottom, I guess, or at the heart of it, you know, protests against leaders who have been in power for many, many years in Belarus and Russia.
Exactly 17 years. Well, Putin was elected 17 years ago yesterday, his
right.
First election.
Exactly. And so he's been in power, obviously, as prime minister or president since then, and Lukashenko even longer. So, you know, I think that is something that can't be forgotten, even though there are different, you know, sort of proximate causes of the protests. As for where it's going, I mean, I think it's a little bit easier to predict to some degree in Russia. I mean, in a way, what this means for the next year before the elections is that, you know, we're going to have all of a sudden there's kind of domestic politics going on and protests, and that things don't look very smooth for the Kremlin in the year ahead of the election. So they're going to have to decide how to deal with this, how to deal with Navalny, and how to deal with what, I mean, going back to, you know, I don't know exactly how many people were at the Moscow protest. Maybe it was smaller than some of the ones in 2011, 2012. But on the other hand, you know, very big crowd, central Moscow, Pushkin Square and Tverskaya. And also significant crowds in several, you know, many or several cities across the country, which wasn't really the case in 2011, 2012. Even in St. Petersburg, I think it was bigger yesterday than it was during those protests, at least in some cases. So, you know, that's something that you can't really, you know, and people are talking about how, okay, this also shows the effect of state TV is diminishing. So that's another problem for the Kremlin. So that's, you know, those are some things to be watching. In Belarus, I guess, a little harder to sort of predict, even in the short term, what kind of effect this will have. I mean, I think Lukashenko is going to continue to try to, play both sides of the sort of EU-Russia thing. And
although it's going to be more difficult now following this crackdown. You're already getting calls for the EU to reinitiate sanctions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, And it was surprising, I think, the extent of the crackdown for that reason, because, you know, he did seem to be balancing things out more.
Although he telegraphed it last week with the talk of fifth columnists and foreign intelligence services, you kind of knew, okay, he was balancing it, but he seemed to be tipping. I mean, my takeaway on the two of them together is that the anti-establishment wave that we've seen in the West, Russia and Belarus are not immune to this. In one way or another, in both cases, these protests are being driven by falling living standards, certainly
right.
In Belarus, but also in Russia.
Yeah, absolutely.
Russians tolerate corruption when times are good, but the corruption issue has serious resonance right now, more serious than I suspected it had. The takeaway in Russia, the big takeaway for me, Navalny has a national network. I didn't realize this. I mean, we've been watching Navalny for a long time now, and the assumption had always been that his support was confined to big cities, to Petersburg and Moscow, but he really didn't have much of a following in the hinterlands. Well, guess what? He put people on the streets in Dagestan. Yeah. In Dagestan. Think yeah. about that for a minute. So that's my big takeaway there. And the Kremlin's got a problem on their hands. I mean, like I said on the Daily Vertical this morning, Navalny's like Freddy Krueger with a YouTube channel and a Twitter feed for them. He just won't go away. Every time they try to knock him down, he comes back stronger and stronger. He's their nightmare. You throw the green liquid in his face and he makes a video out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And now I'm beginning to wonder if the Kremlin is going to up the ante a little bit with Navalny right now and what kind of repercussions that's going to have. We'll see. He's in court today. We're going to see what they do with him now. Right. But what they're going to do with him in the long term, this is getting dangerous in a lot of ways, because they may not let him run against Putin in the election next year, but Navalny doesn't seem to care. He's running against Putin anyway.
No, exactly. And I think, I mean, you know, in this court hearing today, he presumably can only get 15 days in jail. But the question of whether, you know, what the Kremlin's approach will be, if they keep him out of the election, sure, they're going to find legal reason to do that. But he, in some ways, that plays into his hand, because he can take the confrontation to the streets.
And he's it's like he's running for president anyway, even if he's not going to be on the ballot. This is how he's
right. So and so that makes his exclusion from the ballot, if that's what ends up happening, all the more kind of embarrassing potentially for the Kremlin, to and that undercuts the legitimacy of Putin's next term, or in the unlikely event.
It makes it look like they're afraid of him, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Now, the other thing, too, is that Belarus and Russia, I always thought this, are going to change together, essentially. Belarus is not going to change until Russia changes, because Russia is not going to let Belarus change.
Exactly.
Right? And now we have this, I mean, the protests in Belarus driven by falling living standards, because why? Well, Russia cut the subsidies. Russia doesn't right. have the money to subsidize Belarus anymore. It doesn't even have the money to subsidize itself anymore, it appears. So when the Belarusian and the Russian case is going to become linked. The fight between the street and the regime is going to be linked. And this is where why I think we're seeing Lukashenko kind of taking taking something out of Putin's playbook, talking right. about fifth columnists and all. So this is all still unfolding. It should be a fascinating week as the fallout from all of this continues. And on that note, we shall wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. You have been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical Podcast. Joining me in the studio has been RFRL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.